I've been circling the sun for a long time, hoping I'll catch on fire. And I've gotten close enough to see it, to feel it. I still got a burning desire. Gravity can be so heavy. Just like a magnet or a moth drawn to a flame. Yeah, once I get close enough, you know I can't have it. Still I'm trying just the same.
The Friends of the Rant podcast is back with our Carolina Indie Fest artist interview series. You just heard Burned by Nashville-based artist Katie Basden. Katie and her band will play Carolina Indie Fest at 4:15 p.m. on Saturday, May 11th at Hugger Mugger Brewing in downtown Sanford. Here's our interview with Katie.
So I've got with me Katie Basden, who is from who's in Nashville, Tennessee, and originally hails from Durham, but she'll be playing Saturday, May 11th at Carolina Indie Fest. And just wanted to say welcome, Katie. I'm excited to talk about your music. I always start these things by just saying, you know, tell me about yourself. Tell me what made you a musician and what you do and why you do what you do.
Well, thank you for having me. Thanks for doing this. By the way, I always thank people, especially when it's like audience read, like it's, you guys are doing a paper for the people, which is great. And, to do that on its own is wonderful, but then secondly, to include the arts is always just, thank you so much for doing that. I'm from Durham. I live in Nashville, Tennessee now. I've been here for on and off for about 13 years. Okay. And moved here, to go to college at Belmont, and found my way just through being at Belmont. I was a music, I had a music degree. I went for music, and, just basically continued to connect myself here. And I just spend a lot of time at home because I also, that's where I built my music career. And grew up like truly in North Durham off Roxborough Road, off Stevens Lane. If anybody's familiar with North Durham, I went to Riverside High School. And yeah, my parents still live in Rougemont and I try to come back as much as possible, but there's a lot in between from moving here at 18 and then now at 32, but there's plenty, but you know, there, one thing I can say for sure is that Durham is super rich in just wonderful music and eclectic taste. And so that had a huge part in who I am today, which is great.
That's actually was on my list to ask you about because, you know, Durham is such a musical city. And the first thing I was going to ask is what the stuff that made you want to be a musician. If you went to college for music at 18, obviously you were into it from a young age. But I'm going to skip ahead and ask about Durham specifically because it's like you said, it's eclectic and wide ranging. And if there's a type of music you want to hear there, you can find it.
So you can find it. Yeah. I was truly just talking with my manager the other day. We're trying to book a show kind of around this show as well, just to continue to like, cause the band will be with us. And so, you know, just trying to get as many shows there as possible. And, she was like, well, I found some shows that work, you know, that could work, but you just don't look like you fit that bill. And I was like, one thing about North Carolina is that really doesn't matter. I was like, it's like every single, that's like the beautiful thing about it. And then once I answer this, I'll kind of go back to how it, I got started in that. But I remember like there's been some bills that I've played like in my college years, like at Local 506 in Chapel Hill, things like that, where I'm like, I do not fit on this. Like the band before me is like metal adjacent. Like this isn't it. And the thing is just people are excited to hear live music in North Carolina and they don't care that you don't sound like the band before. Actually, they applaud it and it makes it really fun for the listener. And I think that honestly is without knowing it really like shaped who I am as a listener, but also as a musician. It's been the hardest question to ever answer of like, what's your genre? It's like, I don't freaking know. Like it's everything. I grew up listening to the Pinecone Bluegrass Show on Sunday nights on QDR and then, which is now a totally different station, but, and then, but they still have Pinecone Bluegrass Show that you can listen to. And then my dad's favorite band is the Allman Brothers. My mom loves the Doobie Brothers. Like, and then I grew up in church singing. So my mom's a musician. So I'll kind of jump into that. My mom is a musician. She's a church musician, but also an incredible singer and pianist. And, she kind of started in this life around my age and started singing at Disney World in her mid 20s. And, I like to tell people, and it's a very true story, I was like singing and singing harmony before I was talking. I came out of the womb very musically just into it. And I think my parents realized pretty quickly, like, she's not good at math and she's mediocre at the rest of it, but she can sing. And so, no, they were super supportive. I'm just not good at math, period. There's a lot of people who aren't, and I fit in that category.
I'm with you.
Yeah, it's I'm too creative to be good at math. And that's okay. And, but so, yeah, she was a church musician. I grew up every Sunday being, you know, going to church early so that we could have rehearsal and then, have church later or whether it was a Wednesday night. So I was, the question that people ask often is, you know, what was your first concert? And like, utero, like is when it was, because my mom also had a women's ministry. So we traveled with her. She would like sing and do like speak and stuff like that. But my first, like secular show was when the Rolling Stones got back together and played, they played at Wallace Wade Stadium at Duke.
Oh wow.
And so that's, like
that is a first concert, you know?
Right? Like what a first concert to have. And so I got into the Stones that way. And then it's just, it's all snowballed from there. And being able to just see music at any point in time in Durham at any shape. So by the time I got to high school, I'm realizing that there's people that weren't in my elementary and middle school districts who are like totally different types of musicians. So then when you have like talent shows, you've just got all these different eclectic backgrounds, and Durham like fosters that as well. Like that happens in every high school, right? Like you have your emo kids, you've got your kids who love country and all that kind of stuff, but like it fostered it. You could go and hear bands because they would come through, because Durham isn't super small and it definitely isn't now, but in the early 2000s, middle to like 2000 to 2010, was still a relatively like it was a small community of a town, if that makes sense. And, you could still, I mean, but it was still large enough that pretty like middle and major acts would come through. So you could see anything, which was great.
Well, one thing I was wondering about, and you've already answered it, is, I was curious whether your decision to, Moved to Nashville came first, or you went on The Voice? I always ask about these things when I talk to people who have been in situations like that, because it's not a situation that a lot of musicians have been in.
Right. So
talk about that decision and just what it was like and what you learned from that experience.
Absolutely. It's cool that you asked the question, because there was a second time that I've moved back here, if that makes sense. So I moved here to go to college 2010 to 2014. And that was, I was very lucky. My parents supported that. We found the school. I was writing songs by the time I was 12, 13, 14, and I learned how to play my first three chords on a guitar when I was like 14, 15. I had piano lessons up until then, and I can play pretty well, but like it wasn't my instrument. Once I learned how to play guitar, I was like over with. And so I went with that. I found the commercial program at Belmont. And so that's basically getting a music degree like you would at any other arts program, but 2 years of that, you get to study commercial, just like business practices, music tech, all that kind of stuff. So that was cool. And then in 2014, I was just trying to make it work. I was fresh out of college. Like anybody is fresh out of college in Music City, trying to basically find that balance between having like jobs that I had in college, trying to flip them over to being able to play full time, even if it was just downtown in the honky tonks. And I just couldn't get it. Like it was like left and right. Just, I couldn't, like a roommate moved out, like just could never get to a point where it was okay to just like stretch the budget for 1 month. And I couldn't figure it out. My dad got pretty sick with some heart issues, and he was just like, listen, I'm tired of stressing out that you are like not gonna be able to pay your bills this month and blah, blah, blah. So like, what do you think about just moving home? And you can still do your career from here. Like it's totally fine. And I felt like it was a good decision at the time. So November of 2014, I moved back to Durham, and within about 6 months went full-time musician. And because it was afforded to me by not having to pay rent at my parents' house. And you can ask parents, I carry my weight, I love to cook, all that kind of stuff. Yeah. But it's also easy to become a full-time musician when you don't have a lot of bills to pay. And so I was able to use that as like a springboard to kind of start my like North Carolina circuit of just smaller venues. By 2015, I had auditioned a couple of times through college, more than a couple of times, because my mom had pushed me in a good way to like go, let's do American Idol, let's do The Voice, especially like the first season that The Voice had come out. And I just was like, now that I've been on television, I can say this with 100%. Like my story was just not, it was too vanilla. I had parents who supported me. I really hadn't found my voice yet. you know what I mean? There was nothing.
The drama wasn't there for
them. Yeah. Like there was not enough hardship. And I'm not saying that as that's why it's what it is. And that's okay. And had I been put on the show then, I would have not known what to do with myself, because I really hadn't found my voice yet. I could sing. I was all right. But I wasn't able to like bring what I'm able to bring to the table today from experience and just years of whatever. Sure. So in 2015, I had been releasing YouTube videos playing in North Carolina. And within the same week, both American Idol and The Voice, their casting crews reached out to me to come audition. And I was like, oh, well, this is a sign, obviously. But that was the year that, year was the year. And if I don't really follow either one of them, like I'll go ahead and give that disclaimer, because a lot of people are always like, I don't really watch the show. And I'm like, it's okay. I didn't either. I was on the show. So, there was a stint in American Idol when they completely stopped. They got rid of whatever you want to call it, switched over their judges. And so the years that they were reaching out to me, they were really struggling keeping consistent judges. I don't even think this was like maybe year one or two before they stopped completely to kind of just revamp and restart. And so I was trying to figure out people I actually was really blessed with the decision of which one are you going to go on? Cause I went and auditioned for both, continued to the next round. It was cool. And there came a week where I was going to have to answer one or the other. And I remember with people, like my parents asked, what are you going to do? My friends were asking me, and I was like, you know, if I'm not able to get, you know, a true set schedule from American Idol of when things are going to air and that type of stuff, I feel like my best decision will be with The Voice. Cause at that point they had been rolling. This was season 10 that I was being cast for, and they do two seasons per year. And so, I just decided, I was like, you know, I'm going to go with my gut. We're going to go with The Voice. I feel like I liked the integrity of the show at that point more than I liked the integrity of American Idol. And it really was a God thing. Like I just like just kept flopping in the right place and just showing up. I lost my voice several times in different auditions and it would show up for the audition and then leave the stage before I even left the stage. It was just cool. And so made my way out there. And that experience was like none. I mean, there are plenty of people who have not had great experiences, but I have no bad things to say about being on The Voice. The integrity of the show from casting all the way down to the person who sweeps the floor at Universal Studios, which is where we were at the time. I mean, top notch. Everybody is really big on just keeping the atmosphere positive, no matter what's going on. And you kind of see people end up like when you see people get kicked off or they leave early on, you just kind of saw some of that. Like it was, if you didn't really fit into that mold, it wasn't on purpose. Like it wasn't like, oh, this person's acting terribly. They just kind of found their way out. Like it was an interesting, they like almost, they kind of let themselves out the door by just not fitting with the mold and they just weren't ready. And we watched that happen, but a lot. And then also I watched it where it was just like, let's get in here and ride it. And, while it's a competition based show, like I made some of my greatest friends on that season. And I still work with them today. Like I still, my roommate owns a corporate wedding band that I help her manage, and her husband and my husband are best friends. And that was before either one of us had met or like been dating our husbands. And so, it's just, those are things that like, you just, it's like being in a fraternity or a sorority or like going to a summer camp nobody else has been to. Like you just, it's a shared experience that not many people have been through. And even like other years or like alumni from other ones, like you have a shared experience that you know what it feels like. And I have no bad things to say about it. All of the coaches were incredibly kind. The integrity was great. And I learned a lot about myself.
Very cool. Well, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about your music. You had a single come out on March 1st called Burned.
Yeah.
And I checked it out. And one of the things that jumped out at me was, you know, this way you're described is kind of, you know, it's a mix of country and rock and soul. And I heard all those things, but the instrumentation really jumped out at me in that it's got this real kind of, I don't even know how to say it. It's sort of a, not a step away from what you've been doing, but just a progression. And I'm real curious about your songwriting and your process and that song in particular and anything at all you wanted to say about it.
Yeah. I mean, you nailed it. It does. Absolutely. It's a step away from where I've been before. And this song was the first that I released in at least 2 to 3 years. And we went into the studio last year and recorded 5 new songs and they're all with the same producer. His name is Nick Bullock. And I just found myself really like releasing music that I loved. And there were parts like, I don't have any regrets of songs that I've already released. They're absolutely me and they still are me and they're a part of who I was then. Mm-hmm. But Burned is a lot of like, if you listen to Burned currently, I would say it is pretty like equal with who I am now. And so the next song that's coming out right before we do Carolina Indie Fest is, it will probably lend itself a little more towards what you're used to hearing if you've been listening to me or if you've gone back and listened. However, there's an element of what you're hearing in Burned in there as well. Sure. And it's just kind of, it's a production style. Burned came from a space of, it actually, it's kind of segues from being on The Voice. After I left The Voice, I left at top 20 and I decided to move right back to Nashville after that. So that's kind of answering the question from before. I was like, if I don't do this, I will like continue to draw this out and try to figure it out. So I just kind of like bit the bullet right when I moved home or got off. I was done in May. I took like a month to kind of regroup. And by July I was back. And that was great and all well and good, but there was a ton of opportunity coming my way and I had no team to help me figure it out. And also being in music, it's the only, especially for yourself, it's the only commodity on the planet where you're the product on the shelf, but you're also the salesperson for it. And so, your mindset is completely like wrapped up in it every single day, all day long. So if you feel like crap, it's just going to be crap. Like it's just, it's hard to get yourself up every single day, in a vacuum, basically, if you don't have a great support system, to really feel like okay, I can do this. I can do this every day. And so I didn't have a team really to help me. There was a lot of promises made, but then also I was trying to pay my bills. And so burned came from a place of like, I would have my best day and my worst day all in a matter of 10 minutes. And I was so exhausted of just riding that wave of like, oh, I have the best phone call and there's this guy starting a record label and he wants to sign me. And then it'd be like, cool. Also like you need to pay your car note. Like it's just, like, it was just also, and that's just one example of, there were so many things going on and I still was processing the entire time on The Voice, and, both good and bad. Like I said, I have no bad things to say about it, but it was a lot all at once. And it took a while to process everything that I went through in a good way, but also they were all good things. And I learned a lot about myself, but that's a lot of like self-improvement, which is means you're also digging out a lot of self crap inside of you. And it's just, it was a wild time, and how I processed everything is through writing. And, I always feel like once I've written it, I've at least given the feeling or the process, it's like room to live in, or it's like life to go ahead and start beginning to process. And, what I love about it is this song has lived with me now for 8 years. And every time I sing it, I still am right back, either right back there, or I have a new thing to add to it. Yeah. And then it was really personal to me to keep it for that reason. And then when I shared it, the messages that I got from people being like, I totally feel this way too. Like even in my 30s, or I'm in my 40s, I'm in my 60s. And I feel like it's just like, why am I still doing this? And it's still continuing, you know, I never know what's coming.
Yeah.
And, that's been really cool. Cause my biggest thing as I've evolved as an artist is to, I just never want people to feel alone. And, I feel like a gift of mine is to be able to like, if I can process my feelings this way, why wouldn't I share it with people so that they can also put their feelings to words and process it through music as well. And so, but yeah, I think having a newish sound is more just about the like evolution of me as an artist and being able to like represent all parts of me. All four songs that were like, the fifth one is still kind of in process, but all four songs that we're releasing this year, are going to be like, they all kind of meld together, but like there's a funk song that's coming out as well. And so like, it's just kind of, yeah, like it, there's a lot of parts of me, and it used to just, I used to get like frozen when people would ask me what genre, and I'm like, I don't know. There's so many parts of who I am. And, now like, because of how quickly stuff is consumed on the internet, I don't think it matters. I'm just going to release songs. If you don't like them, you just don't have to listen to it.
That's right. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, you kind of reference this, and I mean, it goes without saying that like putting something into words for a song, you know, is cathartic. And even if you're just acknowledging that feeling, even if you just want to get it out. But
right,
I really wanted to ask about the song "It Kills Me," because I mean, those lyrics are mean.
Yeah.
Like, I hope it fills you with disease. I hope it sickens you. Like, that jumped out at me, and that's like a pretty raw song.
Yeah.
Is that the same sort of thing? Just
yeah, kind
of
absolutely.
A feeling rather than acting on it, or
absolutely. Yeah. So that's a really, thank you for saying that. So it's acknowledging, I think songwriting is my version of like, why, so I don't have to wear an orange jumpsuit. It's truly like, it is that, you know, and I feel like it's that way for a lot of people, whether it's songwriting or just listening to music, period. Yeah. We have one receptor that goes out for communication, one receptor in if we're talking, but as soon as you add music into it, you get 12 receptors in. And your brain like connects in different places that it doesn't when you're just speaking or listening to words. And so it kind of helps you process through your body and somatically, even when you don't know that you're doing that.
Yeah.
But yeah, so "It Kills Me" came from an unrequited love place, obviously.
Yeah.
I just remember like, it was probably a night of drinking too much when I wrote it. And, I was like, just reached a point. I was really into blues at the time. I still am. Tedeschi Trucks is my favorite band. And, nice. I just like reached a point of like, okay, I'm just going to get out like all of my worst thoughts, which is, it's funny. Cause the next song that's coming out is in the same vein. It's not angry at all. It's called "Not Today." And every verse is kind of, it's kind of similar to this song where it's like, I'm just going to get out all of my thoughts and feelings. And even if I would never do them, at least I put them on paper and I'm singing them, and I feel like there's a place that it gets to live. So "It Kills Me" is probably almost like maybe a sequel to a song that's on my first record, "Release the Sound," called "China Doll." They're kind of similar. And they're about different boys, which is funny, but they're just all about like It Kills Me to Love You was basically like, I could not just stop loving this guy that I was really into. And I had already told him and he was not into me. And I was like, okay, well, that's cool. But like, I can't shake these feelings. And I just was finally like, this is how I feel in my most raw way. But if you look at it, it's kind of like, the point is to kind of each verse is like, this is a way that you could die. This is a way that you could die. But, and the chorus brings it around. Like, I want this for you because it also kills me to be in love with you. And so I'm wishing all these terrible things on you. Cause if you can't feel love for me, at least you can feel what I feel. And that's where it came from.
Well, I wanted to give you a chance to talk a little bit about what people who are attending the festival can expect from your live show. What's that like?
Oh, I'm so excited for you guys. So we've kind of been revamping the live show. Like, I've been playing a bunch in town just by myself. And I was like, okay, we're going to play live shows this year, especially because I'm releasing new music. What's it going to feel like? And so through just the different communities that I've been a part of, I'm a part of two really wonderful communities here in Nashville, more than this, but two ones that are going to kind of influence the live show. A part of every Tuesday night here in Nashville, there's a open mic night called Pitch Meeting, and it's a full band open mic night. So you like come on stage and you give us like your chords. You might sing your chorus. We ask you what, you know, like where we can find your music, all that kind of stuff. And then we just like start. Like, we don't hear the whole song. We don't do that. We just kind of go with from there and we sing your song.
That situation is like making my palms sweat. Like,
it's right. It's kind of nervous. What's cool though is the MD, the music director for it, his name is Eric Fortaleza. And he does a really great job of kind of like disarming that space and making it feel less intimidating than it should. Yeah. And so he does a great job at that. And then everybody who's on stage is also super supportive and very into it. And enjoys that kind of intuitive space of like following each other, playing something we never played before. It's really magical. So that happens on Tuesdays. And then my husband, he runs a live jam every Wednesday night called The Invite. And it's basically what I just described, but backwards. And so it starts with a house band. It's all improv from the top to the bottom. There's no covers. And the music, it only stops because they take breaks. But after the house set, each player in the band, basically like people come up and switch out different instruments. And so, but the song, like, it's just improv through the whole night, including the songwriting style. And it's really cool. It's magical. Like, you're there and you're like, wow, they've never played this before. And it's like, no, it's all coming. It's all intuitive spaces. And so what I've loved, my favorite bands growing up were Allman Brothers. Like, I'm very into Tedeschi Trucks. I love Marcus King. Like, that's kind of my feel, but you're not necessarily going to get like this huge, like rock and roll Southern blues vibe the entire show from me. But what you will get is that like jam band intuitive style. That feels like it's, if you came to a show three nights in a row for the same set, you wouldn't hear the same thing. So you'll hear stuff that we've already released and you'll hear stuff that I'm releasing this year. But one of the things we'll do is have jam parts in it that will be unique. On Thursday, the 9th, playing at Blue Note Grill in Durham, we're going to have Emily Mussolino open for us. I went to high school with her. Oh, wow. And, but she's also going to get up and do like a family jam moment. And then another part of the show is that I'm going to have a little, like, this is something I have never done yet. But I do it all the time and I'm like, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to have like an improv moment in the set where I like ask people for ideas of what to write about. And we're going to do like a 5 to 10 minute segment. And I'm just going to like jam and write a song about it right there. And then, so there'll be like a live element that you'll never get to hear again, which will be fun. I think people will really be incentivized, sure, but also it makes it fun for us, like, so that it's not just like, here's the song, we're going to do them, and this is what it's going to be like. Because I think what makes a show really fun for me and what helps me like get into the like transcendent part of a show is when I get to also be a creative element to it as well. At that point, obviously I'm a creative element to my own show, but at that moment, being able to create something else on top of something we've already done is magic to me.
That is creating a big challenge for oneself to say, yes, stand on stage and write in the moment. but it's cool.
If it sucks, it sucks. Awesome. It is what it is. You know what I mean?
Sure, it won't suck.
But we can all laugh at it and have a good time, and that's kind of that's my goal. Some of my favorite comedians do that, and I would love to kind of just add that element to. I also do a lot of stage banter, and so I would love to kind of just add that to, like, why not just do it in music as well?
Yeah, as I always say, some of the best musical performances I've ever seen are ones where it's like you feel like what you're watching is on the verge of falling apart, and it never does. And
that,
later on, you go, "How the hell did that happen?" You
know? Oh, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. I totally feel that. Or you're like, I can tell this is new for them too. Like, they're also. Like, that's my favorite thing about, like, when Derek Trucks a lot of times has been interviewed of, like, what's it like? Who plans? Blah, blah, blah. He's like, we just do it. And he was like, which is hilarious because his face is so, like, stoic, right? But, like, he's like, I'm terrified because he feels as though he's the least talented one on stage. And that's like a super Greg Allman statement as well. Mm-hmm. And what he means by that is, like, he's a savant at his thing, but he's not at the rest of it. And, there are other people who are just as good at him, just as good as him on doing their instrument or whatever they're doing. And that putting you in that ring, you have to step up and do your thing. And he's constantly, like, shown humility in that space where he's like, I'm terrified. I sometimes have no idea where we're going, but we somehow land it. And I love it. I think it's great.
Well, just to close out here, I always like to give people an opportunity to say where anybody listening can find your music, find your tour dates, anything else. Obviously, there's websites, there's all the different streaming platforms, but if there's something that you prefer people visit to find your music, now's the time to share it.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Spotify, just that's the space to kind of go and listen and stream. Mm-hmm. You can just type in Katie Baisden and you will find my stuff. And but other places to go are definitely Instagram and Facebook. I really haven't gotten into the TikTok thing, and I don't know if we're going to have it anymore. So that's fine too. But I'm active on Instagram and on Facebook, and my website is just Katie-Baisden or katiebaisden.com. Excuse me. And you can kind of, like, sign up for updates in those ways. And I send out emails and text messages probably once a quarter to let you know what's going on and when new music is coming out and how you can be involved. But and just in the normal ways is where you can find me.
Fantastic. Well, look, thank you so much for your time. And I'm looking forward to seeing you at Carolina Indie Fest.
Thanks, Gordon. It was so nice to meet you. Thanks for doing this again.
Screaming Jesus' name. I hope it nails you to a cross of your shame. When you find out, who really loves you. I hope it sickens you with a fever so high. I hope it fills your head with disease, morning. We'll be right back.
was It Kills Me by Katie Basden, who plays Carolina Indie Fest at 4:15 p.m. on Saturday, May 11th. Next up is our interview with Raleigh's Newspaper Taxis, who will kick off Carolina Indie Fest at 5 p.m. on Friday, May 10th at Hugger Mugger Brewing. Before we get into our interview with Ben from Newspaper Taxis, I'll play Oh Maria. Stick around to hear No Better You Know after the interview.
Now I'm joined by Ben Armstrong, the singer and guitar player from Raleigh-based Newspaper Taxis. Thank you for coming on, Ben. Why don't you tell me a little bit about your band and yourself? You guys are relatively new, I think. So just kind of tell me the Newspaper Taxis story, how you got started, what you do, and why you do it.
Sure, yeah. Thanks for having me on. Newspaper Taxis has been a band since, I think we started around 2020, the bass player and I started doing music together, and he and I met at some open mics around Raleigh. There was this little pizza place on state campus where they would have an open mic every Tuesday, and he and I were kind of doing like singer-songwriter stuff with acoustic guitars, and we met our drummer, who was originally our banjo player, because we were doing some kind of folk rock stuff. And that was initially what I think we even had a guy playing stand up bass for a while, and we were doing that. And I think after a while we kind of got more into playing rock stuff because we just felt like it held people's attention more in the beginning, just because it was a little more dynamic. And you know, being in the open mic circuit, it's just guy after guy with acoustic guitar, you know, over and over. And I think we felt like it was It was going to be a little more dynamic if we plugged in the amps and kind of rocked out a little bit. But yeah, we've been around since 2020, mostly played in the Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill area.
Well, I listened to quite a bit of your music, and this is one of the fun parts, but it's always a little fraught because you never know if you're going to compare somebody to something they don't like. I really enjoyed it. I mean, it's I caught a lot of, like, you know, 90s rock stuff, like maybe like Afghan Whigs, or even what you think of as like cowpunk, like the Gin Blossoms or the Puppets or things like that. Yeah. But there's definitely like a really forward, almost like Western swing element in the kind of the shimmeringness of the guitar, that tremolo sound. Is that something that you're going for? Like, tell me a little bit about what influences you guys bring.
I mean, I really like power pop a lot. You know, I really like, you know, Big Star and The Replacements and R.E.M.
Yeah.
And even, you know, even like 90s groups like Smashing Pumpkins. I really like all that stuff a lot. I mean, I'm probably, you know, when I was growing up, I mean, the first rock music I was ever exposed to was Christian rock, because I came from a very conservative background where that was the kind of music that we were predominantly allowed to listen to. And my dad had a shoebox in his closet with CDs in it, because he'd gotten rid of a lot of his, you know, like rock music, but he still had a lot of Beatles albums in there, because he couldn't bear to get rid of those. And I think he had almost every single one. And I kind of listened to him backwards from, like, started from Abbey Road and, you know, kind of listened to him all out of order. So I really love that. And I think he even had like a couple U2 albums. It was kind of a weird mishmash of stuff. But I kind of exposed myself later on in my, you know, when streaming came around to, found out about Big Star and The Replacements and all that stuff. But
yeah, and now that you mention it, especially Big Star, I can kind of hear that sort of like soaring quality in your choruses, those really singable parts. Is that important to you, finding those hooks?
Yeah. No, I just like melody a lot. I just like catchiness, you know. I want the song to be, you know, I want it to get stuck in your head. I want the chorus to really punch.
Right.
You know, I think it being catchy is the most important thing, just being sticky.
Yeah, and it's that's like a really difficult thing to do, to come up with something that's simple and hooky, but you seem to have a knack for it. Do you feel like it's come naturally to you, or is it something that you've really had to work to develop?
I mean, I've been writing songs for a while. You know, it's funny. My mom gave me some, she found some CDs that I recorded when I was in my teens, and gave them to me the other day. And I still have a CD player in my car and listened to a few of them. And I mean, it was so, so bad. You know, and it was one of those moments where you're listening to stuff you did when you were younger, and you realize, like, you know, because I still feel, I mean, you know, I'll write songs now and be like, that sucks. But, you know, when you actually see how far you've come from where you started. I don't think anything comes all that naturally to me. But no, I really like writing songs. I think that's my favorite part of doing Newspaper Taxis, is kind of having an outlet to write material for.
Are you the primary songwriter? You referenced in the beginning that you met your bass player. You were both doing acoustic stuff at open mics. Does he write as well? Do you write collaboratively, or is it all you? How does that work?
Yeah. Well, when I met Steven, he's a bass player. He was driving around the country in a camper and was just kind of trying to go to open mics in every town that he went through. And he was, you know, playing an acoustic guitar and doing mostly like folk music. And so he writes. And I think initially when we started Taxis, our lead guitar player also wrote some songs. And the the original idea for the first album was going to be that we were all going to kind of contribute evenly to the project. But over time, it for whatever reason, I ended up being the main songwriter. Yeah. But Steven will still contribute. Steven will still contribute like some chord changes or some, you know, little lyrics here and there.
Yeah.
You know, so he's probably the member that, you know, that will contribute a little bit more to the songwriting. Yeah. But he usually starts out with a demo from me that I've, you know, recorded at a home that I'll bring in that has somewhat of an arrangement. And then, you know, everybody else will kind of do their own thing. I try not to tell them what to do too much.
Right. That, and I was going to ask about that. The songs, the production choices, I kind of referenced that. That I almost feel like it's Western Swing again with that guitar sound. I think it's tremolo. It shimmers, you know. And I'm curious if do your songs start that way, or do you have a chord progression and a vocal melody, and the rest of the band does its thing in the studio or in the practice room? How does that work?
Man, I try to switch it up with writing because I feel like there's so many different ways to to go about it. I feel like what works really well for me is if I get on, I've been recording on like a 8-track machine recently at a home, and I've got, in my apartment I live in, I've got some, electronic drums and, you know, a bass and keyboards and stuff. So a lot of times I'll just create sort of an instrumental track with, you know, a verse part, a chorus part, and then like a bridge part. And just kind of, and then the last thing I'll do is plug in a microphone and start messing around with vocal melodies over top of it. So that's generally the way it starts for me. Like the vocal melody kind of comes last most of the time, and the lyrics.
Do you find yourself writing lyrics to the music, or do you have like you don't come in with lyrics that you may put to music?
A lot of times I don't write anything down on like a piece of paper. I've got a notebook that I'll put stuff in sometimes. So if I really get stuck, I'll just open it and just start looking at stuff I've written and kind of adapting it to whatever the meter of the song happens to be. But yeah, I feel like I do it different every time.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your recorded output. I know you have the one full length from 2021 and then several singles, which seems to be kind of a way these days where bands are putting out more singles that may or may not later become part of an album. But I'm just curious about, you know, what may be coming down the pipeline. I know you've already had a couple things this year and last year, but what's upcoming for you?
I think we're just going to keep on doing the singles for now. When we did the one album we put out, I think we were doing that every Saturday for like 7 or 8 months.
Yeah.
So it takes so long. And we were self-recording it in Steven's house. And it's, you know, I mean, I think you can tell. I mean, we don't have the album organized in chronological order from the order that we recorded the songs. But if I listen to it now, I can really tell the point when we were running out of gas. I can really tell in certain songs where we were kind of running out of gas and phoning some stuff in, you know. That album is, you know, 2.5 years old now. And I feel like the stuff we put out more recently as singles, it feels like we're really giving it everything we got every single time. Because we've got, you know, more time to pay attention to it. We got more time to, you know, more ability to promote every single in the way I want to, and kind of give, give each song its chance to, you know, be heard and not be lost on a 12-track, yeah. You know, record. I think we're just going to do more singles. I mean, I've got probably 2 albums worth of material written, so it's just kind of a matter of doing it. But we play out so much, and so much of our time is spent rehearsing. I feel like that's been a challenge, is to kind of find that balance with making time to record and create new music, and then also do the, you know, the live performances, which I think I and the rest of the band, that's our favorite thing.
Oh yeah, yeah, and a balance between being ready to perform in front of people and also learning, recording new music. Yeah. It, it piles up and you gotta prioritize.
Yeah. Well, so, playing out is so much fun.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
Playing out is so much fun, and I feel like recording is kind of like delayed gratification, because it's so much fun when it's so much fun to listen to it when you're proud of it and you know you did a good job. But for me, I can be very impatient, and you know, I mean, with you know, I'll kind of get my shit done real quick, and I'll just be like, yeah, like second take is perfect. And then, you know, and that's not how everybody operates. Some people are a little more perfectionist, and they'll be like, oh, I want to get this part perfect. So I feel like for me, sometimes when we're recording, I'm sitting around going like, fuck, this is taking forever. Yes. It's been so long,
yeah.
You know, but when we're out playing live, you know, it's like, we're all drinking, we're all hanging out, you know.
I noticed in the video you have for, is it Oh Maria?
Yeah.
It was filmed at the Knight Rider, which is a cool spot, a very cool spot in Raleigh.
Have you been out there?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. It's awesome. I love it. Recognized it right away.
You're in a band too, right?
I am. Yeah. 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 We played there last summer. It was our first, it wasn't our first show, but it was one of our first really getting out there.
Yeah.
I didn't know what to expect, but it was a lot of fun, that spot. So.
Yeah. The Knight Rider is an interesting, it's an interesting place. That was one of the first, that was one of the first shows we did that wasn't an open mic with Taxis. In fact, I think it was the first, because that's really one of the only clubs in Raleigh that will let, you know, that will let you play when, you know, there's no guarantee that anybody will show up.
Yeah.
Like they'll let bands that are just starting out play there. But I mean, you'll get a good mix, because there will be some really good bands that'll come. I mean, I've seen some great shows at the Knight Rider. You know, and actually the guy Tim that owns Knight Rider also does the Wicked Witch upstairs and Ruby Deluxe.
Yeah,
so all three of those clubs are owned by the same folks.
Yeah, I'd been told that recently, actually. I saw some bands at Ruby Deluxe at a hopscotch day party.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool, but I didn't realize until recently that all those places were connected.
Yeah, I mean, Raleigh's got a great little network of they've got a great little network of venues. I feel like we're pretty fortunate compared to a lot of towns.
Yeah, yeah. I'd been out of doing music for a long time in this sense, and so it was all kind of new to me. But Raleigh in particular has a lot of cool spots.
Yeah, so. And now with Kings and Neptunes back.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, absolutely. Where else are you playing? You said Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill.
Yeah.
Have you been elsewhere?
Yeah, we play in Wilmington.
Okay.
Quite a bit. Wilmington's got a real good guitar-based music scene.
Oh, yeah.
There's actually a lot of really good bands. Great Indoors is a band from Wilmington that's really good.
Uh-huh.
Nara is a Wilmington band. It's really, really good. The Girls, Hyperloop, like they just have a lot of like really good guitar based bands there.
Awesome. I'll have to look for some of those.
Yeah, it's a place called Reggie's.
Yeah,
does a lot of it.
Chuck and Matt are good friends.
Yeah, yeah,
for a long time. So
yeah, and the Barzar is like more of a Knight Rider esque kind of band that we play at a lot.
Yeah,
I kind of like playing the more like the smaller rooms when we're playing out, because feels a little more intimate. Reggie's is a huge room.
Yeah, I was down there last year for the first time in a long time, and I hadn't seen Reggie's since the renovation. But it is a full blown rock club now. But
yeah,
I know what you mean about those small shows. I mean, it's a little weird to be on stage in a place where people are right on top of you. There's no room to move. You're afraid you're going to hit somebody, but you're right. There's nothing like just everybody packed into a closet almost and rocking out. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, that's what I'm kind of used to. I feel like it feels weirder to me to be in a place where there's like a real sound check and there's, you know, a green room. And, I mean, we've done some shows like that. I mean, there was a period of time where the move was, I would try to look at, you know, shows going on at like the Poorhouse or you know, Lincoln Theater or whatever, and try to see if they had anybody on their schedule where it didn't show an opening band. And I would try to like email the bookers and, you know, yeah, beg to like let us open for them. So we got some good shows out of that. We opened for one band called Starcrawler out of Los Angeles. Okay. at the Pinhook in Durham. And I think that's like the only sold out show we've ever played. Yeah. But that was a lot of fun. But you know, we got that gig off, you know, just asking.
Yeah.
You'd be surprised how much you can get by just asking.
Speaking of that, how did you get involved with Carolina Indie Fest?
I looked at a website that you know, displayed all the music festivals around you know, North Carolina. I usually kind of try to take a look maybe at you know, once a year to see if anything new has popped up, you know, because I mean, there's a lot of good festivals in North Carolina. And I hadn't heard of Indie Fest yet. Yeah, they've been really cool.
Yeah, it's a cool event. And I think you guys are going to get a good reaction there.
Well, I looked at your podcast a little bit and I recognized a few Raleigh artists.
I wanted to talk to you. I mean, the fact that you brought up power pop first, you know, it's not like it's an unheard of genre, but you don't run into too many people that bring that up as, mm-hmm. as a, like a kind of first influence. I just wanted to dive into that a little more. Like, how do you, obviously power pop kind of seeps its way into most pop things. It's right there in the name, but you know, how do you discover that music and how do you go down that rabbit hole?
Mm. Well, you know, I had a, there was this guy who told me one of his favorite songs was When My Baby's Beside Me. And that was the first Big Star song that I heard. And I don't think I really listened to them a lot until I got into Elliott Smith and started finding out, you know, that he was a big Star fan. And he covered, I think he covered their song 13 on one of his compilation albums. And then I started listening to him more and then kind of found out about the Replacements after that, you know.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Alex Chilton and whatnot. Yeah. I mean, for me, that's power pop, is like Replacements, Big Star, you know, even like Badfinger.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I don't know. Some about that. I think it's just the. I think it's just the catchiness of those songs is what's the most attractive to me about it. And the fact, you know, that it's like pop music that's guitar based. Yeah. And, you know, there's nothing like, I don't know. It takes all the elements of pop music that kind of sucks, like the, you know, the syrupy nature of it and kind of the, you know, and it really, I feel like it distills that stuff down into its best form, or whatever's more, whatever it is about pop music that's palatable for me, I think.
Right. It rocks, but it's so earworms, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Very cool. Well, I always like to wrap these things up by giving you a chance to tell people where they can find your music. Obviously, everybody's streaming, you know, the services, yeah, sure, all that, but if there's a specific place where you like for your music to be heard, if you want to talk about your website, anything else that you wanted to add?
Yeah, I mean, we're on Spotify, we're on, you know, Apple Music, we're on Amazon Music. You know, go follow us on Instagram at NPTaxis. And you know, if you go on our Instagram, we got a link tree in there. You can click on that. You know, find our Bandcamp. We throw up some kind of extra stuff on Bandcamp, some live renditions of songs, and you know, put a lot of stuff on YouTube too. Go check us out. We're gonna be playing, the next show is gonna be at Local 506 in Chapel Hill on 420. Yeah, and we're running a deal right now. If you buy pre-sale tickets to that show, the first 10 people to buy pre-sale tickets and DM a receipt to us, you get a free taxi shirt.
Well, Ben, thank you so much for taking the time to join me today, and looking forward to seeing you guys at Carolina Indie Fest.
Yeah. Thanks for having me.
talk to me like that. Know better, you know. You know better than to look at me like that. I'm just like you. Young and dumb and easily confused. Just a man alive. Look at yourself, I'm sure you'll sympathize. Float like a stone once you leave me. Keep your eyes closed.